The Tom Woods Show, episode 2067.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Don't forget you can get one of my books in audiobook format for free. So that includes my book, Real Descent, which is narrated by me. My New York Times bestseller, Meltdown on the Financial Crisis of 2008, featuring a foreword by Ron Paul, Nullification, and others. Just head over to tomwoodsaudio.com, sign up for Audible, and if you decide you don't want Audible, you get to keep the free audiobook they give you anyway. tomwoodsaudio.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm sitting right next to Angela McArdle, who of course chairs the Libertarian Party of Los Angeles County and is running for chair, for some reason wants to be chair of the Libertarian National Committee. But that's great because we want her to do that. We want a sane, competent, hardworking, dedicated, principled person, which is what she is. Now, I decided that given that we are both in Vegas for a few days this week, that we would have another chit-chat, even though we just spoke a couple of days ago. There's endless things to talk about with libertarianism. And I've got some things on my mind, having been following this whole Canadian trucker situation and seeing what's been done to them. We might think, oh, that maybe that happens in Canada, but doesn't happen in the United States. I mean, I don't know, who can really believe that, right? So anyway, plenty to talk about. But Angela, you were telling me yesterday that, because you, of course, you've been working on this anti-mandate initiative in Los Angeles, and you've been seeing what you think might be the beginnings of a kind of political realignment and a move toward decentralization. Can you share with me what you had in mind when you were telling me about that?
Absolutely, Tom. I really think that we are sort of on the cusp of something incredible, that we could be entering a new political age of sorts. So I don't want to get people too excited and say, oh, everything that we know is going to disappear. But what I do think that we're witnessing happen is the fragmentation of major two-party politics, and that as it disintegrates, it will, of course, reorganize. But we're going to start to see politics follow some of the same trends that we've seen happen in television, entertainment, music, other areas where we have seen large monopolies sort of blow apart, destabilize, and reorient themselves in a way that is much more attainable and accessible and democratic, for better or worse, something that average people can actually get involved and participate in. And I think that that's very important to keep in context as we watch things like the trucker convoys and all of the initiative movements and parent protests that are happening across the country.
The tricky thing here might be this, that if it's music and you have major record labels or you have management companies that exert a lot of power over musicians and wind up taking a lot of their dough and exercising a lot of influence over the kind of content they produce, they're not, strictly speaking, they're not really monopolies in the sense that you can make music without them. Whereas the U.S. government and the Canadian government, they are monopolies. And so if you try to go a separate way, they can still make your life unpleasant because they'll say, well, then we're not going to give you the highway funds that you would have gotten. And there are, unfortunately, not that many people who are so principled as to be able to give up the highway funds.
Absolutely. And I think there's a phrase that says, history doesn't often literally repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing here. And part of that struggle is going to be fragmentation of political parties and watching people really split apart internally in these organizations, in things like caucus wars, for example, as you've seen in the Libertarian Party, as people start to get really motivated to take human action and they vie for control of these organizations because they realize that they don't serve them. And I think in politics, it's not going to work out as clearly and straight away as it has in entertainment and media, but I do think that it's going to follow similar trends.
I think what's happening now is that, first of all, we've seen that, to my great surprise, the federal tradition in America has been more resilient than I thought. And so we really have had places that have tried to resist the best they can a lot of the restrictions and mandates that we've observed over the past couple of years. And then sometimes there are red sections within blue states or purple sections within different colored states that have kind of gone their own way. So I think people have, whether they realize it or not, are starting to grow accustomed to the idea that some people live a certain way and other people live another way, and yet they still live within the same geographical boundaries. But some people they know are, I personally know of people who have more or less deprived their children of any social outlet for about 2 years, or want them to wear masks when they go to the mall and stuff like that. And there are other people who just have lived as normal. So I think that has been a lesson to people, that I think up to now it's been assumed that everybody more or less has to live kind of the same way, or at least according to the same narrative, according to the same understanding of the world. And yet you're living in a world in which people live in diametrically opposed ways. They get their information from completely different places. They interpret that information absolutely differently. So how could this have a result other than fragmentation and decentralization? So I suspect that's partly what you're driving at.
It sure is. And I think that this has actually been building since about 2016 when Donald Trump was elected. And the left was really driving this too. This is not just a right-leaning or libertarian issue. If you remember in 2016, Gavin Newsom made comments about California being a nation state and people were willing to secede to get away from Donald Trump. Historically, you know, states' rights have been something that Republicans and libertarians and, you know, people who are interested in the Constitution pay attention to, and those are things that we espouse. But now you've got people of all different political stripes talking about it. And, you know, as uncomfortable and unfriendly and hostile as it is when people who are progressive tell me to get out of LA and leave California, well, you know, that certainly, I guess, sucks to not be wanted somewhere. But it tells me that they're actually okay with me leaving and living my lifestyle somewhere else, and they're starting to accept it, rather than just go straight to the gulag for me. So I do think that it's a little bit of a silver lining.
I want to switch gears a little bit, talk about something going on in Canada. Now, I'm not an expert in the situation in Canada, and maybe you aren't either, but I read the headlines, I read emails I get from Canadian subscribers of my newsletter and stuff like that. And the thing that is most disturbing about this right now, of course, we've seen this so-called law of emergencies being invoked by Justin Trudeau, but the specifics of it are what are most disturbing to me. Like, for example, with the banking system, we've seen people's accounts frozen or closed, or they can't get any bank anywhere to open an account for them, or Stripe has frozen funds that belong to them, and they have no alternative. And I think the libertarian now, the libertarian response that you get on Twitter from a certain wing of libertarianism is very glib, and it's the, oh, well, start your own payment processor / banking system / whatever, as if that's a plausible answer to most people. That does not seem like a reasonable approach. That's, I think, that kind of glib response where they don't at least say, yeah, there's some kind of weird coordination going on here between the state and the banking sector that probably we wouldn't see in a genuine free market, and we need to move toward there. Instead of acknowledging that the state is playing a role here, you know, in the background, instead we get this contemptuous, oh, well, you can create, you know, you can do this. No, nobody's entitled to a bank account. I think some of that is driven by the fact that we have a wing of libertarianism that can't stand people like the truckers, that culturally they just despise these people. They are not at all the people that this wing of the Libertarian Party wants to appeal to. They want to appeal to people who are 100% in the pocket of the Democrats, that the Libertarian Party has, I think, relatively little to offer them other than your freedom, which is what we offer everybody. But if the other party says, we'll give you your freedom plus, you know, $1,000 voucher, you know, we can't compete with that. So I don't try. I say we offer everybody freedom. And I think that right now that's a message that is going to resonate a little bit better with people who sympathize with the truckers or the genuinely marginalized groups in America, not the groups that are championed by every major outlet in society, but the really marginalized groups who are demonized and driven to the fringes of society. But what is your gut response when you hear things like now people who support the truckers are being demonized or outed, or the truckers themselves can't get bank accounts and all that? I know people can say, oh, you can be unbanked or you can use Bitcoin. I guess so. But what is your response to stuff like that?
I think this is a really important moment in history and a really good lesson on building community. And that if you see people who are disenfranchised and they can't get a bank account and they're having trouble paying their bills or anything like that, you need to go in and instead of scolding them and telling them what they could do, obviously they can't go back in time. what we need to be doing is teaching people how to use cryptocurrency when there's an emergency like this. Get an account, just teach them the basics, open an account, teach them how to get a card where they can use it as, you know, as close to their traditional debit card as they could, and start helping people. And we really need to teach people how to get out from under the thumb of central banking. And rather than scolding people and saying that they didn't do the right thing, you know, because they were more courageous, obviously, than some of the rest of us, and they're risk takers, we need to reward them and really wrap our arms around them in the libertarian community and take careful note of people who are ridiculing and scorning anyone who's making advances for our freedom, right? Because those are not the people you want in your inner circle.
You use the term states' rights. I know there are some people who are very sensitive about that term. States don't have rights. Yeah, we know that. Okay, it's just a shorthand term which refers to the arrangement that exists under the 10th Amendment, whereby the understanding is that powers are not delegated in the Constitution to the federal government remain in the hands of the states. That's all it means. It doesn't mean we actually think the states have quote-unquote rights. It means that in a federal system, powers are divided in this way. Now, we being radical libertarians, we reject that whole framework, but that is the historical understanding of how the American system works. But when we say states' rights, I think increasingly these days, the problem with it is that many of our American states are very large and heterogeneous. I mean, I think I've heard it said that California, if it were a separate country, would be like the 13th largest economy in the world, some crazy statistic like that. And so what you actually have when we characterize certain states as red or blue is a gross oversimplification of something that on a micro level is much more variegated and interesting. So I suppose living in California, you might be able to say a little something about California. There isn't just one homogeneous blob called California that all thinks the same way. There are all kinds of different little ways of living in California. But because all we can think of is we can just think in terms of California, California has one voice and one color, namely blue. We just assume, I think, that that's the way it has to be, that we all have to live, so that if you're in California, you're just trapped and there's nothing you can do and you have to live a blue lifestyle. What's another way we could be thinking about that, or a better way for us to be living and interacting with each other?
So there have been some really interesting political movements over the last couple of years. And one is counties trying to secede from one state and join another. And it hasn't happened yet, but there are counties in Oregon and Washington that would like to join Idaho. What that really tells me is that there is an appetite for secession, and people are trying to get as close to it as they can, even if they can't form their own little kingdom or actually leave the United States or join another state. They're trying to work at the local level. And we've also seen in California, particular counties stand up against Gavin Newsom and say, no, we're not going to enforce your mandates. So I think that we're seeing a trend towards localization within reason, right? Within as much reason as they can move it, as far as they can take it. And I think that's a better way to look at things, because California is dominated blue because the city of Los Angeles has, you know, 4 million people, and most of them are progressives. The county of LA has 11 million people. And we basically control, unfortunately, the rest of California. People are starting to wake up to that and realize it, and they're trying to find convenient little workarounds. And I think that that's a really good way to try to navigate these sort of political situations when you're trapped in a blue state like California and you can't move out.
Well, a key thing to bear in mind is that there's nothing sacred or necessarily determined about the state boundaries that we have. These are obviously completely arbitrary. They could just as easily be completely different from what they are now in many cases, particularly when you see that there are entire cultures contained within these states that are completely at odds with other cultures contained within those states. If you look at upstate New York, they have a very, very different opinion of the governor of New York than people who live in New York City have. And this is why we have to be able to put on the table topics of conversation that just aren't there right now. And this is an area where the GOP is not, with maybe a handful of honorable exceptions, is just not doing the job. The GOP is still caught in 1980s slogans, and that's a bygone world. We don't live in the world of Ronald Reagan versus Walter Mondale anymore, where there was at least some sense of camaraderie as Americans. That's just gone. And the GOP is so concerned about being not respectable or not liked in the media that they can't raise the kind of issues we're talking about now. But it obviously needs to be raised. There are people who feel in California, for example, feel like they have no voice whatsoever. And they don't have a voice. And that's why they want to move to some other arrangement where they do have a voice. And so it also goes to show the hypocrisy of people who say that there are certain, let's say, Black Americans are not having their political voice heard. Well, if that's the case, okay, well, then let's see what can be done about that. But they're not the only people who have no voice. If anything, they have a much, much more robust voice than, let's say, some traditionalist living in some corner of Sacramento somewhere.
Absolutely, that's correct. And one of the biggest problems that both major parties are facing right now, and certainly to a lesser extent, the Libertarian Party, we're like the little guy on the block, is that political parties are not meeting the needs of regular people. And people are really making their needs known right now. What are people upset about? Mask mandates, school choice, critical race theory being taught in school, vaccine mandates, vaccine hesitancy, medical freedom, things like that. These are the things that people are really fired up about. And obviously, you know, progressives and the Democratic Party is not meeting us. They're just not entertaining these ideas at all. But the GOP is definitely doing that classic, well, you know, I hear you, at the driving the speed limit reply. And that's what we've really got to hammer home to people in political leadership, if there's any hope in reaching even a few of them, is that no one cares about their out of touch sort of pandering, dodging the question remarks. We want to get right to the heart of the matter, which is, this is how I want to live my life. Why can't I just live my life this way? That's why we're seeing all of these things like initiatives and trucker convoys and parent protests happen. People are just fed up with all this nonsense.
Hey, everybody, a very quick message from our sponsor today, and that is Skillshare. The last couple of years have really, really beaten a lot of us down. But here's a small way to bring a new source of joy into your life. Something that takes you out of your comfort zone, something you haven't tried before, something that you can look forward to. Skillshare is a platform that brings thousands and thousands of classes on a huge variety of topics into the comfort of your home. And these are topics that appeal to the creative side of you. So music, photography, illustration, graphic design, fine art, film and video, including independent film, photography, web development, business analytics, marketing, freelance and entrepreneurship, and a lot more. These are short, specific, to-the-point classes that can work with your schedule and give you the opportunity to interact with and get feedback from a community of other creative people. I have a bunch of creative daughters, and one of them is interested in Martina Flores' class, Be Your Own Boss, Strategies for Launching Your Creative Career. So not only do you learn the artistic side, but you can also learn how to market yourself. Plus, because you know me, you can try it out for a month for free and see what you think. But you're going to love it, and it's going to help bring joy into your life, and we could all use that right about now. So explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods, where our listeners get a one-month free trial. That's 1 month free at Skillshare.com/woods. Let's say a little something about the Libertarian Party in a little bit more detail. What exactly, at this particular moment in history, is wrong with the Libertarian Party's message, apart from... And again, I'm talking only at the national level. There's been great work done at many state chapters and local chapters. But at the national level, apart from the COVID stuff, that's obvious enough how what a horrendous and embarrassingly bad job they did on that. What's the general problem, if you had to sum it up, as one general problem that you'd like to overcome as chair? What is it?
Without a doubt, the Libertarian Party at the national level has low self-esteem. They chase mainstream approval. They want mainstream acceptance. And so they mold and craft all of their messaging, their outreach, everything about them. They craft it to be accepted by mainstream CNN viewers. And that is the biggest problem. It's what holds us back. It's just incredibly painful.
And in particular, there's nobody, really, there's nobody out there saying to himself, I'd love to join the Libertarian Party, but I just feel they lack enough mainstream respectability. If only I could hear favorable remarks about the Libertarian Party on CNN, then I would give them another look. There's nobody thinking that way. That kind of thought does not occur to any normal person. There are people, I guess, at the national level who think people are thinking that. But I assure you nobody's thinking that. And to the contrary, the people who do pay attention to the Libertarian Party, when they listen to what it's saying, they say, why in the world would I want to be involved in a train wreck like this, where they accept 75% of the mainstream narrative about every major issue, whether it's Russiagate or January 6th or the virus or whatever, they take the fashionable, fact-free, dumb guy opinion and they think this is going to win them something. It actually doesn't. What they get in return is the complete and utter contempt of the media they so desperately seek the approval of. So after 3 months of Angela McArdle as chair of the LNC, what has happened to make a noticeable difference in that?
Oh, well, how about an actual marketing and demographic study with proper marketing segmentation? That is definitely coming down the pipeline. One of the problems with the LNC is that they don't do marketing. They don't do market research. They don't have any idea what people want, and they don't care to listen when people actually tell them what they want. So we're going to actually dig in and do some market research so that we can find out, what do people care about? How do we perceive that? How do we relay and communicate our ideas to them? How about, I don't know, actually hiring a handful of people who are skilled in that instead of just muddling our way through it because we have no expertise? Let's, listen to other people who are successful in libertarianism and the larger liberty community and follow their lead because they seem to be on the right track and being very successful. They're spreading the message and they have a large following. That's a first step. So that'll be some of the things that we roll out.
This week at the fundraiser that we had here at the Bellagio in the beautiful penthouse, somebody was talking about what's actually involved in supporting you in your race for chair of the party. And that, of course, you have to be a delegate from your state and all this and go to the national convention, place a vote for you. And it may seem a little bit exhausting or complicated or difficult. And somebody else said something about there being some states that have a shortage of people who can be delegates. Can you just talk through that, that if people really do want to support you to the extent of actually casting a vote for you as chair, you know, we're a little bit late in the process, but it's not necessarily impossible. What would you tell them?
I would tell them to sign up and become a member of your state party. And the rules for every state libertarian party are a little bit different. But generally, you can go to the state party's website, find a link and join, and there you go. Now you're a member. And some states want you to be registered libertarian. That's a detail, you know, it gets a little bit complex. But whatever, sign up, get connected with someone, preferably a Mises Caucus organizer, but just any good solid libertarian who's respectable and doing good work in their state party. Find out about Reno, get a ticket, and go down there and show up. What frequently happens is that people commit to being delegates and then something falls through. They have a personal issue. There's a financial issue, you know, sick grandma, something like that, pregnant wife, and they can't make it out. So they need people to fill those little holes. And that's where you come in. We definitely need some people to come as fallbacks. You could be what we usually refer to as delegate alternates. Definitely a good opportunity there.
If people want to follow you further, of course, we'll link on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2067, to your Twitter feed. But do you have any links you can give us where people can follow you directly?
Absolutely. You can see a lot of the work that I do on marketing and strategic planning, leadership and decision-making and conflict resolution. You can see that if you go to patreon.com/AngelaMcArdle.
Okay. I will link to that also. So Angela and then McArdle, McArdle. So I'll also link to that, tomwoods.com/2067. All right, we're going to wrap things up. I want you to be able to get on time, hop on your plane and get back to do the important work you're doing in LA. So thanks for chatting, and I'm glad we had a successful event.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
All right, everybody, before we wrap up here, I know a lot of you guys are interested in privacy and breaking away from, let's say, some of the big tech outlets. And I have a website that brings together for you all the different alternatives that exist out there, or at least a lot of them, to platforms like Facebook, Google, Chrome, YouTube, Messenger apps, donation platforms, etc. Puts them all in one place for you conveniently, and then you can look at them and decide which ones work best for you. And the site is datahound.net. So DATAHOUND. datahound.net. So I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/2067 just for future reference. But hang on to that, check it out. And of course, as it turns out, the person who created that site got the hosting through my link. But I'm glad to promote a site like this anyway, because it really does do something very important. So if you would like to get publicity for a website you are thinking of creating, well, don't forget, The details are at tomwoods.com/publicity. Before you get your hosting, check that out and check out all the things I can do for you to help get eyeballs on your website or blog. So that's all I have to say for today. See you next time.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.